everyone, and welcome back to part two of the interview with Kasai and Asala Fetch on the anthology Lions Roaring Far From Home. I'm gonna begin where we left off a little before, so you know, give us context to what we were talking about at the time. And I hope you know you all enjoy it. Again, I'd love to hear from you. Reach out to me if you have any suggestions on, you know, somebody else maybe that you'd like to hear from, and I'll do my best. I think this interview really sparked a lot of really great points that can be used to further understand the corruption behind, you know, Ethiopian adoption and the impact it had on, you know, everybody, but specifically adoptees, and how that can how that can kind of manifest and create other issues further down the road for adoptees such as myself. So without further ado, here is the second part of the interview with Kasai and Asala Fetch.
Children. So I think we need to be honest about the drivers of adoption, and I think we need to name it, and I think we need to be political about it. And so, yeah, I think identifying as trafficked or displaced, we put that in the book because a lot of the folks who did their search found out they were trafficked, found out they were stolen, mm-hmm. found out that they were displaced, found out that the agencies lied, found out that Ethiopia played a part in, you know, in their corruption. And so I think it's really important that we just start having raw and honest conversations, because what I'm seeing right now with adoptees, suicide rates are high, you're seeing eating disorders, mental health disorders, substance abuse, all of these things. And for anyone to think that removing a child from their country of origin and putting them in another country is not going to cause any harm, that's like inherently dismissive of the violence, right, that was at play. And I think we have to acknowledge that transracial adoption is rooted in racial trauma. You have African mm-hmm. kids who are Black being placed in white families. And how is that not racial trauma?
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I really appreciate both your comments on that. I think, you know, talk about the book is like being a method of, you know, connecting through shared stories and meaning. And I think for me, especially, and I know I'm doing such a poor job at the moment, because I read this during my break, the book during my break. And I remember I was like, I really was in it. And I was like calling some of my adoptee friends. I was like, guys, you need to listen to this. And I would like go to a chapter and start reading it to them. They're like, well, Dad, you're like so all over the place. But I was just like, you know, I was just all over the place. And I was so excited about the book and like what the adoptees or how, you know, were talking, like the way they were presenting their stories. And it honestly, I think it totally helped to, it was like a connector, I guess, even though, you know, I don't know them. Maybe I will reach out to some of them. I don't know. I might, because I think it's so, so fascinating, but that book has brought so much peace for me because going back to what you were saying, Asala Fetch, there's like, I've had this, like such like a frustration, anger with adoption that I've never had before. And I was one of those people that was like, totally went into that whole, like, you know, again, I'm so grateful for this experience. I'm so grateful because I, you know, as always, you could have been like a dying kid in Africa, you know? And it's like this, And it's so annoying because like people know nothing about Africa, first of all, because Africa's massive, you know, it's a whole continent. And you know even less about Ethiopia specifically. So it's so interesting to be like, okay, taking on that narrative, because regardless of how you feel as an adoptee, I always felt very like so disconnected with from what everybody else is saying around me. You know, mm-hmm. you're so, you know, they don't even ask what my opinion is. Oh, they just assume that I am grateful, that I should be grateful, that there's such a good experience for you. And nobody takes the time to take a step back and be like, hold on. At its point, at its foundation, it is just an erasure of somebody's entire existence. Yeah. And I know the chapters, Asala Fetch, you talked about like almost feeling like you were never born. And I've never connected more to somebody's words in my entire life. And I was like, I don't even know who that is as a person. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's something that I feel like a product of adoption as opposed to product of my own choices. And I think that is totally the result of being stripped of choice and forever having people tell you what you should think, what you should wear, what you should do, how you should speak. And I think that caused a lot of confusion and frustration. But this book, again, maybe not when I'm in school right now, because I think that would totally take such an emotional toll, but I'm so drawn to such all, the entire book, but some chapters I've been like, wow, this brings so much clarity and so much, I think it affirms you in a way that adoptive parents can't, that other white people can't in general, you know, Black people can't unless they're, you know, also adopted. And it is such a niche sort of experience that people get upset if they're not allowed to come in, which I've noticed, but it's a niche group of people of experience that need to be shared because it's so different. I don't know if that makes any sense,
I understand what you're saying. And I think that Kasai was actually the one who wrote that piece. I think her title was Hunger. No worries. But I was like, yeah, I'll take credit. No, I'm joking. But you know, Kasai's my best friend. And like, I cried reading her chapter. Like, I was like, why am I crying? I'm like, because it was so wild reading her chapter and hearing her framing around the piece where you talk about like, I don't want to say rebirth, but like not knowing your birth, right? And so, because I'll let you speak to that, but yeah, I was moved by that reflection.
Oh, well, thank you for, it's okay, Lynette, don't feel bad.
I'm like, oh my God, and I had my notes, but they're not here. So I'm trying to remember.
It's okay, Lynette, it's okay.
Okay, sorry.
No, I feel like, yeah, don't worry at all, all. But I want to make this clear. If people are still, if adoptive parents are still listening to the episode at this point, they might have like ran to like switch it off. But if they're still listening, like they need to understand that. And I mean, I know that they do understand that, and I don't want to center them in this conversation. But I think that it's important to make it clear that they're the ones that wanted us.
Yeah.
Agreed.
They wanted us. This whole thing of being grateful, no, they should be grateful for having us. We didn't choose to leave. I didn't choose to leave Africa.
I did not.
You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not saying, look, like it, this is not a binary thing. I can appreciate what I have, and I can also feel a lot of grief and feel awful, which I did for most of my life. Well, no, I shouldn't say that, but like, you know, like it's different feelings can coexist at the same time about our lived experience and the lives that we had. But if you want to go back to the basics, they're the ones that filed that paperwork, though. They're the ones that paid that money. They're the ones that wanted to have children. It was, yes, it is saving, but at the base, it's also because they wanted to have children.
Yep.
And so this thing of the power dynamics of being like, you know, I want it, I get it. I want it, I get it. This is very much.
Yes.
This is like, and it's like, I'm entitled to have that. Mm. Which is not everybody feels that same sense of entitlement about what they can have. Mm-hmm. And if you look in the world, who feels more entitled to have that? It tends to be people who are wealthy and people who tend to be white or whiter, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When we're talking about adoption, like the demographics of who gets to adopt internationally, it's pretty white, much all white faces
white that you'll wealthy. See. Yep.
So this is it. And I know it's uncomfortable for adoptees to think about it. They feel triggered. Mm. You know what? It's like, it's up to you to believe the narrative that you want to believe. Like, I don't care if you're angry, after hearing me talk. Okay. I've shaken enough feathers in my life already. So just be mad. But at the base, it is an exchange that benefits the people who want to have children and also Ethiopia, because Ethiopia has made money from adoption. They've benefited from vulnerable children being taken off their plate. They've benefited from tourism. They've benefited from white people
setting building up NGOs, you know.
Ethiopia, I don't know about now, but last time I knew, Ethiopia was, they called it one of the donor darlings of Africa. You know, like, because Ethiopia would give, would receive so much, you know, money from, like, Western governments and donor darling. That's what they were called. So it's like Ethiopia participated in the selling of children. I mean, that is a really raw way of putting it. But, you know, like my thing, and this is the issue too that I have with adoptees talking about adoption, is that we talk about how we feel, we talk about like the injustice, but we don't connect it back to Ethiopia. The only reason I'm sitting here now is because there was a war in the north. That is because of politics. So as much as Habeshas, whether you're adopted or not, I know it's like nobody wants to talk about politics, but it's like it's something that, and this is not unique to like Ethiopians or Eritreans, right? But with us, it's really interesting. Is that like it's really really hard to actually like come together and have peaceful conversations. You can get mad, but like just it's. And I see this like with Ethiopian adoptees, like there's like a reluctance to talk about politics. Yeah. Meanwhile, it is because of politics that we're actually here.
Yeah.
Why can't we talk? I don't shy away from this. And I know it makes people uncomfortable. But if there wasn't a war, there wasn't a famine, which was not a drought. It was actually like people being starved, which is happening right now.
Yeah.
That is politics. Don't go blaming white people about that either, because those things within Ethiopia that we need to work on as a people. Yeah. Of course, there's external factors.
Yeah.
But the point is that it's also like, oh, like it was Egypt. It was, you know, it was this country. It was like the U.S. It's like, yeah, they were involved. And also, we need to fix your own shit.
Yeah.
So I also feel like it is a lot for adoptees to think about. Not everybody's politically minded, blah, blah, blah. But in your analysis, please don't leave out the circumstances that made your parents vulnerable.
Yeah.
The fact that they were losing their jobs, the fact that they were kicked off their lands, that does have to do with the political situation. Granted, you know, there's things to do with, you know, like, you know, women's rights. Yeah, that's not
connected. Reproductive rights.
Like,
yeah,
but you know, but it's just like the thing that kind of ties everything together is actually politics. So I don't know. I encourage people to factor that into their analysis. I know it's tricky to maybe not focus on it, but acknowledge it, because it is part of the story, and that's also why, you know, adoptions in Ethiopia are reopening. You know, I don't want to put it out there because I'm not promoting people trying to adopt, but it is because of like the past few years have been hellish, and now they're like, oh shit, like there's so many kids, so many people, so many orphans, because the fathers were sent to war, people are killed. What do we do? Oh yeah, let's open up adoption. Like, and that's what Ethiopia does. So yeah, I'm not happy with Ethiopia either.
Oh, me and I think I'm well, no, Kasai, I think,
oh wow.
I'm also so glad you brought that up, because I think also Ethiopia bears a responsibility of helping us get closer to our truth, reconciliation. I think Ethiopia always kind of gets this. I think you articulated it so well. They get like, it's almost like their hands are clean. And it's like, no, your hands are the dirtiest probably. You literally went into villages and it was a predatory process. And no one wants to talk about how predatory the Ethiopian government was. Like, you sat up there and abused folks who were uneducated, who were poor, who lived in rural areas. I mean, when I think about my story, my parents were taken advantage of, just like many other parents. And so I think Ethiopia does bear the responsibilities of our reconciliation. We want access to our records. they have to be a part of the solution. And the solution is not to reopen adoptions. The solution is to say, what happened to these kids that we placed overseas? I don't know how many years ago, but like, and what responsibility do we have in aiding them to access their records, their families, and their truth? And I think, yeah, adoptees have to be a part of, Ethiopian adoptees have to be a part of that solution, but the Ethiopian government needs to resource what we want. It's not fair. It is not fair what happened to any of us. And we're left to solve the issues. No.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Thank you for saying it. And thank you for bringing that up, because that's the action step, is really like accountability and action. Like, because there's us in the diaspora, and then there's also, there's our parents back home who are they're looking, like, there's so many parents who are looking for their kids. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. And it's just like, how does that, like, can we, what can we do, to help reunite, people who want to be reunited, because like there's so many of us. So yeah.
And most of us will probably never find our families. That's the painful truth too. I think we also need to acknowledge that many of us will live this life not ever healing from our adoption. We won't. It's not going to happen for us, but we resist nonetheless. And so I think this is a part of the resistance to call out these systems of abuse. So
yeah, it's okay to be mad.
It is. Be mad.
So that's good. Good to know I'm in good company, you know? I'm really happy. And I you have my brain kind of working in overtime, trying to like vocalize this, because it's so interesting that you guys bring this up. Cause I always talk about adoptees in my podcast. I don't know if I'm articulating what I want to say well, because I feel like there's so much emotion around it, and sometimes it's important to take that out so you can look at things more clearly. But I think they're like, as adoptees, I just totally see them stuck in the middle of a process and totally lost in all of it. And I think it's super interesting that it is super easy in some extent to be really upset at your adoptive family for what they've done, for what they didn't do, what they should have done, what they should have known, what they decided not to know, all that aspect of it, what led them to adopt, the fact that they have so much power in that process, especially once you are physically removed from your country, from everything you've ever known, to hear they have say over everything. Now, this is mom now, this is dad now, this is your siblings or your aunts, your uncles, these are whatever, all these different labels for things that you already had. So that part of it is really frustrating. And then I think there is a part of Ethiopia for a really long time where I had such a hard time wanting to care about it. I did care, but I wanted to not care. And I think hearing you guys talk about this, I think there was definitely a frustration and anger with Ethiopia. I'm like, why? Like, why would your own country do that to you? You know, like, why was that even a thing that's happening? So I think there is that dual accountability that's 100 being stripped. It's not necessarily, it's even looking at, again, my parents died. So I think I'm in like a different sort of category, but I think it's interesting because like what led them to give you up, if that was even the case, right? Even if that was the case. And then looking at the adoption process itself in Ethiopia, looking at the ways that they mishandled that, and that was the starting. Like, why people just go over there and start pulling?
Money was the driver.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And money was the driver. Let's.
Yeah. And I just want to say too, like, I feel like from my own experience, connecting to like Ethiopian communities, it's been helpful in some ways. But I also feel that there is a lot of discomfort with Ethiopians and shame, and they don't really want to acknowledge these things. I think the older generation, you know, it was more like, you know, like you should be grateful for that, you know, and it's just like, I don't, I don't want to hear that. So I've had like plenty of like, you know, arguments like in corner stores with uncles, with me like borderline like yelling. And customers being like, oh, okay, maybe we should get out of here. But yeah, I think I'm going, you know, like, but it's just to say that like, yeah, I think it's interesting because I think sort of not the antidote, but like a way to, I saw healing as like, you know, being more connected to the community, and that hasn't really helped. I think with the younger generation that are more like political, that I've had good conversations, but it kind of depends, honestly. So I feel like that's like, cause I'm saying that cause I think like what Ethiopians, like adoptees, maybe people like me, I should say, will like try to go to church, and that like, that's their way of reconnecting, and that mm-hmm. could be very healing. But I think I'm somebody that's like, I'm very curious, and I like truth and questions, and somebody like me and how I am with Ethiopians, it's like they don't really
like that.
And so it kind of I used to really like ask questions, and I realized like, okay, people are really like, they feel ashamed, they're uncomfortable, they don't like this, and so I stopped. And then so I have an interesting, I think, relationship with the diaspora, especially certain of a different generation. But I just encourage adoptees to like also like do their own research, talk to different people, just I think because we are outsiders in our own culture, which is really unfortunate, people are not really going to be honest about certain things. I've really noticed that people are not super honest, and that actually really hurt me a lot, to be honest. Like, I've been really, really hurt many times.
And I think it's this, everybody sees adoption, even Ethiopians, as a good thing. And it's like, what do you mean? Like, and so to try to have a political conversation, or to try to have, to contextualize what has happened to all of us in this process, like, we get shamed for speaking our truth in all communities, right? We're not Ethiopian enough. And I'm saying this as someone who came to the U.S. when I was 6 years old. I'm very proud to be Oromo. A lot of my healing is coming from ancestral awakening. I think Kasai has been like very instrumental in my spiritual work and understanding self. And so for me, what I would say to many of us right now is tap into your ancestors, right? Like, we cannot rely on the Ethiopian community and the diaspora to be our healers. Like, they're not going to heal us because they're also confused about, about adoption. And so I would say like the most healing comes from us reclaiming our identities, and whatever that looks like for each of us. For me, it was tapping into the practices of Oromo people, my ancestral connections. And so, yeah, I think I agree with Kasai. There's a lot of pain that goes on with connecting with other Ethiopians because they also see us as outsiders. And it's like, that's a painful reality, to be rejected from so many cultures, but then to experience this rejection from this culture that you came from, you know? So yeah, I think we have to reclaim our healing in ways that connect us back to our ancestors.
And no, that's amazing. I know we're coming to the end. I think the last question I guess I have for both of you, to kind of talk a little bit about, as we end, I guess is also a question probably start at the beginning, but why Lions Roaring Far From Home as the title? And what is like the final thing that you would say as adoptees are reading this? And I really do, and I'm going to push for adoptees to read this, because it's been so instrumental in my own life, and it's something I keep by my bed, and I'll just, you know, read it just as a reminder. But also for adoptive parents, because I know my mom actually bought that book, so that was at our house, which was nice, when I was ready to read it. What's your call to action for them and as they're reading this anthology?
Go ahead, Kasai.
Well, look, yeah, I had to look at my notes because, you know, there's so much to say. What is my call to action? Okay, it's tricky because I think we're all at different stages of our lives. You know, like some of us are in university, some of us are raising children, some of us are, you know, we're all like at different stages. So like our capacity to engage on the topic, you know, varies. So I can't, you know, be prescriptive about it, but I would just say, like, read the book with an open mind and, you know, like, reach out to other adoptees. You know, we're more and more visible on social media, which is amazing. So I would just, what I would love to see is more a stronger community, because the truth is with us is that so many of us have suffered in silence. But we put on really good show for people. So it means like we're performing in school. We're like, you know, we're checking off all the boxes. We're very high, you know, like some of us are like very high achieving, but then we really struggle internally. And then people don't see that. They just see like, okay, like she's doing this. She comes from a good family, all this stuff. And so this is, I feel like what it does is like, it makes it, we get more and more isolated, and that really can have severe consequences, and it can hit you when you're at a different point in your life. But this is something that I think Ethiopian adoptees, we really experience a lot of like hardships, but nobody sees it, and we don't share it with other non-adoptees. You know what I mean? Like maybe we share it with, like, people who are really close or our partners. So I think for me, the most healing thing about everything we've done is my relationship with Aselfish. The power of connecting is so key. Therapy is important. Don't negate therapy if you can afford it, but create systems of support with like-minded people, really, to me, because to me, honestly, that's been a lifesaver for me, is like this friendship that I've had with the Salvage. And like, we don't even talk about adoption anymore, but that was like, we're like, oh, we don't want to talk about this. So yeah, seek out community.
Yeah, seek out
That's really the first thing, because I also think that through this connection, amazing things can happen, especially if you both have the same sort of like interest, you know, like, you know, when it comes to our community, like there is a lot of work that needs to be done. A lot of adoptees are suffering. We have high rates of everything bad. I don't want to apologize, but we have like high rates of a lot of bad things, and it's not our fault. It's just because of the trauma. People didn't see us. We didn't have support. Like it's, but there is a lot of work to be done with adoptees, domestically in your own countries, and also our families back home, which I hate the word birth family, by the way. I do not use that term ever. But there is work to do with, you know, our families back home who want to reunite, who want to find us. So it's a lot. And also like, you know, our families back home, like trying to reunite, but also just like keeping families together in Ethiopia who are like struggling to stay together because of, you know, like everything politically. So there's a lot of work that can be done, but first of all, take care of yourself. And like, you know, there's a lot of things that I would love to do. But to be honest, I haven't really been able to, because like I've had to focus on myself, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's just, so some of us cannot be stretched very thin. And so I feel like there's a moment in my life where I will be able to engage in Ethiopia, but it's not right now, unfortunately. So that's the second thing, just focus on yourself, keep the projects alive in your heart, and, work on them gradually, and when you can, you'll get there.
Yeah.
I think as adoptees, as Black people, it's hard out here, you know, so mm-hmm. we gotta, you know, lean on each other for support, mm-hmm. for moral support, because again, it's like, we look great externally, but that's not really how we feel about ourselves sometimes. So always keep that in mind when you're interacting with other adoptees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate you saying that, because like, I got so emotional just hearing you talk, and some of your tears coming up. I know I'm outing you right now, but I think you and I are family preservationists, right? And like, we've always named that we're family preservationists. And so I think when we were writing this book, our hearts were rooted in the fact that the victims in this book are first families and adoptees, right? And it's like very important for people to understand that. And so the reason why we chose Lines Roaring Far From Home as a title, if you see the image, it's actually a woman standing up and like petting a lion. And we know we have different feelings about the lion, Kasai and I, and we can get into it later. But anyways, I think for us, what that represented is that we're the children, the folks who were displaced, adopted, trafficked, whatever you want to call, we're that lion always roaring back to our land. And I think it's important for people to understand that our families, our caregivers, whoever had us before we came into placement, they are a part of who we are. I think there's this idea that when we're placed, that we forget everything before placement, but so many of us came here when we were older, and the body keeps the score. Our body holds trauma. And so I think naming it Lines Roaring Far From Home is this idea of we're always thinking about our ancestral land, our people, our connection, our culture. And I think my call to Ethiopian adoptees would be heal self first. I think it is important that we heal not only individually, but collectively, right? So and don't censor your feelings, right? Don't censor your anger, right? Work through that. And so, yeah, I'm going to put in this shameless plug of, you can purchase Lions Roaring Far From Home on Amazon right now, as well as Kindle. And so I just want to say thank you, Ladette. This has been such a very like grounding conversation, and you're doing amazing things. And I think this is the work that's going to really transform how we look at reconciliation, truth and reconciliation for Ethiopian adoptees. So grateful for you. So,
no, thank you both. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for, you know, kind of explaining what the title and kind of going into that, you know, adoptees focusing on themselves first. And I think that we get lost in all of it. It's always about fixing for other people, for whatever it is, for our parents, for back at home, but whatever it is, I think we lose ourselves in our own experience in figuring that out, because we can't help others when we're hurting ourselves, right? So anyway, like, thank you both of you so much for speaking on it. I hope to talk to you guys again, and I know this is going to be such an amazing conversation people will probably listen to, and I'll be listening to and re-listening to, because it's been like a therapy, right? I feel like I should bill both of you. send you a check for the therapy I just had. But I really appreciate your time and your wisdom. Thank you both so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you, Ladette. I mean, you're so proud of you. Like, you're just, yeah, like, this is you opening up and having these conversations is helping people, you know. Yeah. And I think it's like, it's probably helping you too. Like, I don't know. It's so lovely to see you like kind of documenting your journey. So congratulations to you. You know, I love you, and I'm really proud of what you're doing.
Yeah. And this book was written for people like you, Lynette. I'm just so touched by your work. And I also want to say to other Ethiopian adoptees out there, we wrote this book because of you all. Like, I get emotional saying that, but like, we wrote this book because we wanted you guys to feel seen. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for the episode. Thank you so much for all of you listening in. I know I've been on a bit of a hiatus, but I'm so glad to be back. I'm so excited to get going with some of these interviews that I've already actually done and just have to, you know, go ahead and upload and Bring Out Your Way. I thank you for all of those who have been reaching out through TikTok, through the Instagram page, by email, just to connect and the willingness to share. I've learned so much. I'm so grateful to you. And until next time, bye-bye.